Okay, we want to welcome everybody to our Wednesday evening Bible study. We're in the book of Daniel, chapter 3. We're going to get right into it. Nebuchadnezzar, the king, made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and its width 6 cubits. Now that is 90 feet by 9 feet. And that is disproportional. Something that tall should be wider. I'm not sure why they did it that way, but it was not in proportion. It says he set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Now, I want you to note here, remember the statue that Daniel talked to him about, the succession of empires. Mm-hmm. And the head of gold was Babylon. Mm-hmm. And then you had Medo-Persia, and then you had Greece, and then you had Rome. Mm-hmm. Well, Nebuchadnezzar, you know, he was a very proud, arrogant, bad-tempered, authoritative king. And he didn't want his kingdom to end. And so it's like he was thinking, I'm going to make this entire statue of gold. Since gold represents me, I'm just going to make my own statue. It's all going to be gold, and my kingdom is never going to end. That's what he was hoping for. That's what a lot of scholars believe. He didn't want Babylon to be overthrown, so he has this statue made. Now, some scholars think that Nebuchadnezzar is a type of Antichrist, and we're going to see later how he, you know, demanded this image to be worshipped, and that the statue itself is a type or a foreshadowing of the abomination that causes desolation. And so if you read in Revelation 13, you'll see a lot of similarities here. Okay. Now it says in verse 2, and King Nebuchadnezzar sent word to gather together. This is called satraps. Now these satraps were just one notch below the king. So as we read these, each one gets a little less authoritative. It goes from the most powerful down to the least. So the satraps were the most, just next to the king. Then the administrators, then the governors, then the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces. Now, if you have a different translation, mm-hmm. you might have a few different words, but still it goes from the most powerful down to the least. Okay. To come to the dedication of the image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Okay, verse 3. So the satraps, the administrators, the governors, a lot of repetition here. The counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered together for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So it's interesting because we're going to find out as we go through here, he's mentioning all these great officials. Now, remember, Daniel had a very high position after he interpreted that dream. Mm-hmm. But we're going to see as we go through here, there's absolutely no mention of Daniel. Okay? A lot of possible explanations for that. We know that he was in charge of a very large area. He wasn't confined to the palace anymore. So he could have been away on business. So that kind of tells us that this wasn't necessarily worldwide. It was at least over a very large section of Babylon. But there's another possibility. Daniel could have been somewhere way out there isolated, you know, and when he didn't turn around and worship this statue, you know, he wouldn't have. But there wouldn't have been anybody there to tell on him, okay? Because these people were back at the palace, you know, all these officers and everything. So that's possible, too.
What do you mean being isolated?
Well, he could have been way out in the boonies somewhere working. He could be way out, he was miles and miles and miles and miles away from the palace, okay? And another, the province of Babylon was huge. It was a large area, hundreds of miles.
Yeah.
He could have just been way out there somewhere, a long ways away from the people that were mainly doing this. He would have probably got word, yeah, you're supposed to do it when you hear the music, but he wouldn't have. But there wouldn't have been anyone there to really say, hey, you're not doing this, and run to the king and tell him about it.
He wouldn't have heard the music either.
Well, yeah, now I'm going to talk about that too. That's a good point. I'm going to talk about that too. That's very interesting. We'll get to that. Okay. Oh, and one more thing about Daniel. For whatever reason, the fact that he's not mentioned, a lot of people, when you look at the foreshadowing and type of all that, they say Daniel was a type of Christians who are not going to be there during the tribulation period, during the rapture of the church, okay? That Daniel represents those Christians who are not there. See, because a lot of people talk about this being synonymous with the tribulation period. And so Daniel's not around. If he represents Christianity, we're not around either. So that's, we'll look at that again a little bit later on. Okay, 3:4. Okay, we talk about, where are we at?
4.
Yeah, I'm just trying to find it here. Okay, then a herald cried aloud, "To you it is commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that at the time you hear the sound of the horn..." Now, again, you may have different instruments here, depending on what your translation is. "The horn, the flute, the harp, the lyre, and psaltery, in symphony with all kinds of music, you shall fall down and worship the gold image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up." Now, the translation that I was looking at on my computer, the Holman Christian Bible translation, says it a little bit differently. Instead of saying that this music is played in symphony, it just gives you a list of all the instruments, and then it says, "and all kinds of music." Okay.
It says other musical instruments.
Okay. What? Anybody else have something different? I know you have the same. What does yours say, Dave?
It mentions all of them. It says the sound of a cornet, flute, harp, saxophone, a plastery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music.
And all kinds of music. That's what most of mine says. Now, this is very interesting because, like Dave said, if this is a huge area, how is everybody going to hear this music? Okay. Well, you know, Babylon, you think of Babylon, you think of the word Babel, the Tower of Babel. What happened at the Tower of Babel? They were all one language. They were rebelling against God. They were trying to build a tower to reach the heavens so they could, they're going to reach the heavens just like God. And God confused all their languages, okay? So this is kind of a reversal because you've got people in Babylon that speak different languages, different dialects. Well, how are you going to, if you don't use music, how are you going to do that? You're going to have to send all of his people out at certain times all over the province and say, "Hey, it's time to go turn and worship the statue."
So he does it by music.
Does it by music. And music is a universal language. Mm-hmm. You know, so whenever they hear music. So it could have been like this. The fact that most translations don't use the word symphony. They just say, anytime you hear music. And it says all kinds of music. Mm-hmm. So you could have somebody 100 miles away. And they have musicians there. Whenever you hear music, it wouldn't have to be all at the same time. Just whenever you hear somebody play music, you better turn in the direction of where that, they know where it is. They know that they can't see it from 100 miles away, but they know what direction it is.
Okay, then I have another question.
Sure.
If they know where it is, but they're way out there, and you said Daniel could have been way out there, how do them people way out there, how do they know that these people here are looking at the statue?
They don't. If you're way out there, everyone's basically on their own. Mm-hmm. You know, there might be some officials there somewhere who's trying to make sure everybody, but it would be almost impossible to make sure that everybody's doing it. Now, they're close to the palace, yeah, they could probably watch people and catch them, you know.
Sure.
But I'm sure that a lot of people didn't worship and got away with it, at least way out in the province.
Okay.
But
whether they heard the music or not, or unless someone said, right, "I'm telling on you because I, yep, saw you and you did not look towards the..."
And thing. Some people might do that. That would, okay, be possible. Right. But the thing about music is some German composer can write a music score, and an American can read it because music notation is the same no matter where you are in the world. Music notation is the same. And music and melodies is kind of called the universal language. So think of it as a reversal of the Tower of Babel. In order to get people to worship the statue, He is getting everybody to listen to one language.
Yeah.
It's like going backwards, going from many languages to one.
Makes sense.
At least to do that. So that's an interesting take on that. Anyway, and by the way, this it talks about this herald. He is a foreshadowing of the false prophet. Okay, because the false prophet is the one that tells everybody to worship the image of the Antichrist. Remember?
Where's the herald?
The herald,
H E R A L D.
I know, number but I mean,
it's in verse 4.
Then a herald.
The herald is a person who's a messenger. He's a messenger. He's an announcer.
And he's a foreshadowing of.
Foreshadowing of the false prophet.
False prophet.
Because the false prophet was like Antichrist's right hand man. He was the religious leader.
Right.
And he worked for the Antichrist.
Okay.
Okay, and we did 3:5, so we're on 3:6. Okay, there is 5. Okay, and whoever does not fall down. Excuse me, and worship shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. Mm-hmm. Nebuchadnezzar didn't mess around, buddy. If you didn't do what he wanted you to do, you were in bad shape. Verse 7. So at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the horn, flute, harp, and lyre in symphony with all kinds of music, all the people, nations, and languages fell down and worshiped the gold image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Okay, we already talked about that part. About the music. So let's move on. Verse 8. Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans. Now remember the word Chaldean and Babylonian, same thing.
Same thing. Has astrologers. Is that the same thing?
What is it?
Astrologers.
Oh, well, some Chaldeans were astrologers, but not all astrologers were Chaldeans. But I don't know. It doesn't really matter. It's just certain ones. They could have been astrologers. It says certain Chaldeans, so it could be. It says, came forward and accused the Jews. Now, they're tattletales, see. They spoke and said to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. They always said that. You, O king, have made a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, and symphony with all kinds of music, shall fall down and worship the gold image, and whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. So what they're doing here is they're saying, remember, we told you, you said this. They're reminding him of what he said. It says, there are certain Jews whom you have set up. In other words, okay, Nebuchadnezzar, you did this. Whom you have set up over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not paid due regard to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image which you have set up. It's like, okay, Nebuchadnezzar, what are you going to do about it? They're saying you have made them leaders. They should be examples to others because they're our leaders. They are disobeying. They are defying you. They are ungrateful for what you've done for them. So they really know how to push his buttons.
They're really stirring up trouble.
They really are instigators, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the Hebrew children saved their lives because he was going to kill them all, these wise men, remember?
Yes, he was.
And they saved their lives by interpreting the dream. Mm-hmm. Says, then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and fury, gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying to them, is it true? Now, he liked them. Remember that. He liked them. Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the gold image which I have set up? Now, if you're ready at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, and symphony with all kinds of music, and you fall down and worship the image which I have made good, So he's given him a second chance. He says, I can't believe it, but I've heard you're not going to do this, but hey, I'm going to give you a second chance. You hear it and you do it, we'll just let it go. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning, fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you from my hands? You can see how arrogant and conceited he is. Okay. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. In other words, they're saying, bring it on. Bring it on. He can save us. Our God can save us. But even if he chooses not to, we will die before we disobey you. And then they said, our God has more power than you. Now imagine how that made Nebuchadnezzar feel. Because he thought, you know, I'm the one. I'm great. So they really laid it out for him.
They had great faith and nothing could change their mind.
That's right. And they had great courage too. Mm-hmm. So, okay, 19. No, I read that part.
You're on 19.
19's where you need to be.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I see there. I skipped a line or two. Then Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury, and the expression on his face changed toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He spoke and commanded that they heat the furnace 7 times more than it was usually heated. And he commanded certain mighty men of valor, some translations say the strongest soldiers he had, who were in his army, to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and cast them into the burning fiery furnace. So he calls on the strongest soldiers. He makes the furnace 7 times hotter because he doesn't want to take any chances. He's thinking, maybe their God is awful strong. He was playing his strongest hand here. Because at first, when I first studied this years ago, I thought, well, it's just because he was really, really mad. But he was trying to make sure that this God could not rescue them. Mm-hmm. He was basically fighting a battle against the God of the Hebrews. Okay. Then these men were bound in their coats, their trousers, their turbans, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's command was urgent and the furnace exceedingly hot, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound, excuse me, into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished, and he rose in haste and spoke, saying to his counselors, did we not cast 3 men bound into the midst of the fire? And they answered and said to the king, true, O king. Well, look, he answered, I see 4 men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt. And the form of the 4th is like the Son of God. Now, can you imagine these guys? They're just walking around the furnace, you know, the fire has burned their ropes, so they're just walking around, and most scholars believe this is Jesus himself, and they're walking with them, you know, hey guys, want to roast some marshmallows while we, you know, I mean, they were not affected at all by the heat from this furnace, and they weren't even in a hurry to get out. They could have just walked out because there was a big opening. They had to have an opening so they could tend to the fire and everything. So they could have just walked out where the opening was, but they were just walking around in there. That's what makes this so neat. And so he says, then Nebuchadnezzar went near the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spoke, saying, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here. Then, I don't know why they can't just say they, but it says, then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came from the midst of the fire, and the satraps, administrators, governors, and the king's counselors gathered together, and they saw these men on whose bodies the fire had no power. The hair of their head was not even singed, nor were their garments affected, and the smell of fire was not on them. So they're standing there, all these people are around them looking at them, you know, and they can't believe it. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying, blessed is the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel, well, of course, that's who he would think it would be, and delivered his servants who trusted in him, and they have frustrated the king's word, and he's admitting, and yielded their bodies that they should not serve nor worship any god except their own God. And notice when the first time it says God is a little g, and the second time it's a big G. Therefore, I make a decree that any people, nation, or language which speaks anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces and their houses shall be made an ash heap. He liked to do that sort of thing, by the way. We've seen that before. Mm-hmm. Because there is no other God who can deliver like this. And then the king, again, he promoted him even higher, promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the promise of Babylon. So we see that Nebuchadnezzar finally recognizes the authority of God. He recognizes the supremacy of their God. And he recognized the bravery and the loyalty of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Now I want to read from this book, page 89, about the foreshadowing. It says, although this is a true story about an actual event, we have seen that it's filled with prophetic significance. The tribulation period will be like this blazing furnace. The Antichrist will be like Nebuchadnezzar, a proud, godless, violent, out of control, one world Gentile leader. The false prophet will be like the herald who told everyone to worship the statue, and the abomination of desolation will be like the statue. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego would be like the Jews and possibly others who follow God, who go through the tribulation period. The fourth man in the furnace would be like Jesus, who helps his people. But who or what will be like Daniel, and why is he not present? Could it be that the church is like Daniel, and it will not be present during the tribulation period because of the rapture? So I thought that was pretty neat. You know, so there is, like I say, there is symbolism. Even though, like I say, the last six chapters are all prophecy, these first six chapters have a lot of prophecy in them. Right here we see prophecy. We saw prophecy last week talking about the statue, the different metals, and the empires that they represented. So, any questions for you?
I just thought, like, maybe kind of like a question statement. The fiery furnace, mm-hmm. does that kind of represent in the angel that is in there with the three men, represent our faith in knowing Jesus died on the cross for us, saves us from hell?
Mm-hmm. Well, you could look at that way. Sure, you could look at it. You could make an analogy for that. Yeah. Okay. They could have a lot of different meanings to it. But I agree with the scholars that say this was Jesus himself. You know, this is what we call a pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus. Whenever you see the word Lord in the Old Testament, if it's in all caps, that, I know J. Vernon McGee believes this, a lot of other scholars, that is Jesus before he came in the flesh. So pre-incarnate means before birth, before his fleshly birth.
Right.
He was actually there. Yes. Some people believe that Melchizedek mm-hmm. was Jesus, simply because it says he has no beginning and no end. You know, so these are appearances of Jesus in the Old Testament, you know, and many believe this was one of them. And, of course, Nebuchadnezzar, he doesn't know what he's looking at, but he said it looks like the Son of God. I don't know how he would know what a Son of God would look like, you know, but there must have been something very special about that one, because he could see four individuals, and that one was different. He said it looks like the Son of God. So I believe it was Jesus himself in there. And the amazing thing is that the guys weren't even scared or anything. You know, they were like, we're fine in here. No problems, you know. And it's just a really neat story. Any other discussion on this?
Well, I want to go back, but you can turn that off, then we'll go back.
Okay. All right. We'll have prayer. Dear Lord, we just thank you for this study tonight. There is so much here, so much to glean from it, dear Lord. And we pray that as we learn more and more, we can learn the lessons that these chapters teach us, and it can help us become better servants for you. In Jesus' name, amen.